Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast. I am Malisela Latwaba, an associate in the employment law practice at CDH. In today's conversation, we unpack the draft code of good practice on dismissals with a particular focus on a move towards a decriminalized approach to disciplinary hearings. Since the early 2000s, the often cited case of Avril Elizabeth, Home for the Mentally Handicapped versus the CCMA and others, highlighted the need for a departure from what might be termed the criminal justice model that was developed by the Industrial Court and applied under the unfair labor practice jurisdiction that evolved under the 1956 Labor Relations Act. That model likened a workplace disciplinary inquiry to a criminal trial and developed rules and procedures, including rules relating to bias and any apprehension of bias that were appropriate in that context. The sentiment of moving away from a criminal justice model has since been echoed in a number of labor court and labor appeal court decisions, where the courts reiterated that a disciplinary hearing is not a criminal trial, and ordinarily, courts will uphold an employer to no more than the statutory code of good practice, or if they are more generous, the terms of the employer's disciplinary code and procedure. Joining me today to unpack this topic is Yvonne Mkefa, a director in the employment law department based in Cape Town, who boasts over two decades of employee relations experience, both in-house as an employment relations executive. Yvonne, thank you for taking time to unpack the amendments to the draft code of good practice on dismissals. Your initial thoughts, please.
Thank you, Malisela. I'm happy to be here and participating in the podcast. We can see from the draft code that a great deal has been learned from the jurisprudence on dismissal over the past few years. This is definitely positive as the code enhances dispute and conflict resolution in the workplace. Looking at the topic at hand, fundamentally, the overarching principle is that disputes must be resolved expeditiously with less formalities without compromising on the fairness of the process itself. Coming to the current code of good practice, it deals with some of the key aspects of dismissal for reasons related to conduct and capacity. The code is intentionally general. Each case is unique, and departures from the norm established by this code may be justified in proper circumstances. For an example, the number of employees employed in an organization or a company, or the nature of the misconduct or the seniority of employees involved may warrant a different approach. The key principle in this code is that employers and employees should treat one another with mutual respect while balancing the interests of both. A premium is placed on both employment justice and the efficient operation of the business. While employees should be protected from arbitrary action or from employers, employers are entitled to satisfactory conduct and work performance from their employees.
Now, considering the current code, and insofar as disciplinary hearings are concerned, what is expected of employers?
So, Malisela, the code addresses workplace discipline at two levels. But fundamentally, employees and employers must be on the same page on what is required from a substantive and a procedural fairness point of view. Firstly, in terms of the current code, all employers should adopt disciplinary rules that establish the standard of conduct required of their employees. An employer's rules must create certainty and consistency in the application of discipline. This requires that the standard of conduct are clear and made available to employees in a manner that is easily understood. Some rules or standards may be so well established and known that it is not necessary to codify or communicate them. It is important to know that the form and the content of the disciplinary rules will obviously vary according to the size and the nature of the employer's business. In general, a large business or organization will require a more formal approach to discipline. Secondly, formal procedures do not have to be invoked every time a rule is broken or a standard is not met. Informal advice and correction are the best and most effective way for an employer to deal with minor violations of workplace discipline. Repeated misconduct would warrant warnings, which themselves may be graded according to degrees of severity. Most serious infringement or repeated misconduct may call for a final warning or other action short of dismissal. dismissal should be reserved for cases of serious misconduct or repeated offense. Normally, the employer should conduct an investigation to determine whether there are grounds for dismissal. This is from a procedure perspective. This does not need to be a formal inquiry. The employer should notify the employee of the allegation using a form in a language that the employee can reasonably understand. The employee should be allowed the opportunity to state a case in response to the allegation. The employer should be entitled to a reasonable time to prepare the response and to the assistance of a trade union representative or a fellow employee. After the inquiry, the employer should communicate the decision taken and preferably furnish the employee with written notification of that decision.
All right. And considering that the current code emphasizes the informal nature of disciplinary proceedings, why the need for an amendment in the form of the draft code?
As I said, that I think the jurisprudence on dismissal is directing us to ensure that this is understood. Firstly, the draft code seeks to provide employers and employees with a better understanding of it, which is the code itself, by making use of the terms that are commonly used, even though they do not appear in the Labor Relations Act per se. For example, and whilst not related to dismissal for misconduct, the word retrenchment is used in the code as opposed to dismissal for operational requirements, which appears in the actual act. Secondly, in relation to small businesses, it emphasizes that the code should not be interpreted in a manner that requires small businesses to comply with obligations that are not operationally practical or feasible. Thirdly, the code emphasizes a few things, amongst others. One, the purpose of discipline is for employees to understand what standards are required of them and to guide their behavior. Secondly, the purpose of following a fair procedure is to ensure a genuine dialogue and an opportunity for reflection before a decision is taken. Thirdly, a form and the content of disciplinary rules and procedures may vary according to the size and nature of the employer's business, and that smaller employers may adopt a less formal approach to discipline. Fourthly, allegations of misconduct should be set out in sufficient detail to enable an employee to understand the nature of the misconduct. And lastly, employees should be afforded a sufficient opportunity to prepare and make representations on both the misconduct allegation and the appropriate sanction.
Well, at the departure, they're using the word state to case versus making representations. Now, considering these factors which you have just listed and the jurisprudence which you touched on, would you say that there was already a move towards, away from rather what is called the criminal justice model?
Indeed. Over the past few years, we've seen developments in this arena, and there are a number of decisions where the Labor Court has endorsed a decriminalized approach to disciplinary hearings. One such example is Mnisi versus 56 others against the SABC.
Yes, and I recall that matter, which had a contractual element to it. And if memory serves correct, the court noted that it was actually for the employer to hold 134 disciplinary hearings, with the forensic investigator having to testify each and every one of them, each with a different chairperson and likely a different initiator. That would be practically and operationally impossible.
The court went on further to state, Melissa, that even in cases where the recommended procedure was not followed, whatever procedure is followed must comply with the rules of natural justice. And in the labor context, the content of the rules of natural justice are best ascertained by reference to the procedure contained in the Code of Good Practice for dismissal. This is also in line with the ILO, which is the International Labor Organization Convention 182, which contemplates that an employee accused of misconduct would be allowed an opportunity to state a case in response to the allegations brought against him or her, a reasonable time to prepare that response, and in particular, that this engagement need not assume the form of a formal inquiry. This aligns with the draft code.
Now, Yvonne, I hear you mention small versus large-scale employers. What is the difference? What is the determining factor Is there a round figure for employers which should be considered when ascertaining whether or not an employer is a large or small-scale employer?
In its current form, the draft code is silent on this topic. However, practicality is a key theme which runs through the draft code. Perhaps something important to point out with that question in mind, that considering that this is a draft code, it is important that there is public participation because we are required at this point in time to submit written comments on the draft code. And this must happen within 60 days of its publication, which was published on the 22nd of March 2025. This is where we come in as a law firm, who remain available to assist our customers and clients.
Most importantly, Yvonne, for CDH's clients, given that the code is in draft form, is there any obligation on employers to make amendments to their current disciplinary codes and policies?
The short answer is, at this juncture, no. However, in considering the move towards a decriminalized approach to disciplinary hearings, employers are encouraged to consider making amendments to their disciplinary codes and policies in line with the sentiments echoed by our courts, particularly regarding the decriminalization of disciplinary hearings, so as to align with the amendments that will be brought about by this draft code.
All right, and there we have it. I think what is clear is that boardrooms are not courtrooms, and the draft code of good practice on dismissals seeks to advance the departure from the criminal justice model of the old industrial court. Whilst we must uphold the Aldi Alterum Partem principle, and considering the amendments set out in the draft codes, it is clear that the winds of change are forthcoming. Employers and employees and organised labour are all encouraged to prepare for a new wave of legislative changes to the South African employment law sphere. Yvonne, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Malisela.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.